Welcome to Blogs on Tape. Today's post is An OSR Aesthetics of Ruin Wall? Pende Art in Decay. Written by N.C. Remeyer and originally published in March of 2023 on his blog, A Most Majestic Flywhisk, at majesticflywhisk.blogspot.com. An OSR Aesthetics of Ruin Wall? Pende Art in Decay. Graphic. A photograph of a wooden sculpture of a woman's head and torso, with a bowl cut that protrudes significantly from the sides of her head. It appears to be broken off and perhaps even rotted or termite-eaten away below the elbows and waist. Caption: Eastern Pende Kishikishi Rooftop Finial, produced by an unknown master carver. End graphic. Footnote: The hairstyle really does look like this. In the footnote is another graphic, a photograph of Pende people with a haircut accurately depicted by the wooden figure, attributed to Henry Nicolai's L'Aquilu, Etude Géographique d'une Région Congolaise. Quote, the artisan poet is not concerned to make a work for eternity. The work of art is perishable. The style and the spirit are preserved, but the old work is quickly replaced and realized anew as soon as it becomes antiquated or is destroyed. Unquote. Leopold Sédar Senghor, The General Nature of African Art. Every poster gets three annoying neologisms, and I'm striking one off right now. Also, Ramadan Mubarak, y'all. Despite my questionable orthodoxy, Wallahi, bro, law-bearing dreams are canonical. Just read Futuhat and also enter Kilwa for 40 days. Plus general laziness, I do love the month. Hard to beat free chai every night and group singings of vaguely sexual Sufi odes at 3 a.m. Def don't think that they're for everyone, but ritual austerities have been surprisingly helpful in supplementing my meditation exercises and the like. Anyway, I hope everyone has a peaceful month of reflection, whether or not you're observing. Vibe retrieval. Marsha B. has posted another banger on the Traverse Fantasy blog, the March 2023 post, Avoiding Homogeneous DIY Play. She don't miss.png. It's on separating DIY principles of play from the D&D framework. It's good and short, so please read it. If you have time afterward, I recommend looking at Jenks' response post on his own blog for another pro-dungeon perspective. It's the Gorgon Bones blog, titled Dungeons and Crawling Around in Them, from March 2023. Marsha suggests that we would do well to consider what things are conductive for interesting play in general, and it could be cool to try doing exactly that for another hobby staple, the OSR Aesthetics of Ruin. Described in a post with that same title on the Against the Wicked City blog way back in September of 2016. Much like the principles Marsha discussed, I think there are good bones here, and I agree with the take on Against the Wicked City, on the reasons for Ruination's longevity and popularity, but it's certainly not for all DIY games, or even all OD&D games. I've occasionally seen discussions of Ruin as aesthetic as an antidote to Whiggish understandings of history implicit in conventionally structured games, or even D&D's colonial imperial roots as a whole, which seems a bit odd to me. Declensionism as a concept was an essential part of the Whig historian's analytical toolkit, one largely abandoned by the profession today outside of surgically narrow reconfigurations. The first time I became aware of some core concerns of this blog post was over the course of a few discussions with the inimitable Corey, who was kind enough to let me repost these here. Quote, focusing on a sense of growing understanding, rather than strictly material growth, is what I see as the key to making a setting feel optimistic. I don't think I'd feel good playing 1950s Monsanto propaganda the RPG. I'll try to sum my thoughts up. I think what really devastated me was the implication that hope beyond the narrowest individualistic sphere is somehow morally problematic. I mean, if wilderness exploration and exploitation plus hopefulness is bad, it's not hope I'd get rid of.
I think there's a very sensible position being forwarded here. A good deal of this spirit can be found in post-post-apocalyptic stuff, and that's cool in its own right, but I'm more than a little bothered by its frequent reliance on disjunction. For all the emphasis on the new shoots growing from old soil, chaining the vision of fruitful ruin to a preceding dark age, the post-apocalypse, is still a remarkably Petrarchian move. More importantly, ruination itself is rarely seen as a generative process in all this. Ascent, descent, ascent is still a Whiggish grand narrative. It may simply be that the aesthetics of ruin are inextricably linked to their classic presentation, relegating it to Marsh's specific aspects category, but something I've been considering in an uncooked fashion is whether the issue lies within the ways we, even in the classic Against the Wicked City post, tend to think about ruin.
Planned ruination. German explorer and collector, Leo Frobenius, infamously called the Penday elders he met philosophers of ruin. His intentions were not kind, but there's some amount of truth here. Eastern Penday culture spends a lot of time living with its own ruins. In fact, it generates them intentionally. Graphic: a black and white photograph of a man kneeling and working outside of a thatch structure, topped with a sculpture of a woman holding a child. Caption: the kibulu of Chief Komba in 47, ornamented with a rooftop finial carved by the legendary master carver Kaseya Tambwe. End graphic. Footnote: the Eastern Penday practice of political succession, not uncommon in pre-modern East Central and Central Africa. In the Penday version, each successive holder of a title takes the name of the title, which also serves as the name of the community.
End footnote.
The bust of the female figure which I began this post with was previously a freestanding statue situated on the rooftop of a kibulu, the residence of a chief among the Eastern Penday. The central pole of the house would have supported the statue in its position, as seen in the image above. All of these statues, called kishikishi, are unique, but there are certain distinguishing features that remain consistent. The axe, the secret-keeping pose, the connection to living women, chiefs, etc. The kibulu and the kishikishi are both incredibly interesting for a range of reasons, and I highly recommend reading the paper I'm relying on here in full. Zoe Struther's Architecture Against the State: The Virtues of Impermanence in the Kibulu of Eastern Penday Chiefs in Central Africa. But I'd like to focus on the impermanence bit. Quote, many Penday argue that the kibulu must be regularly abandoned and a new one built in its place to avoid its becoming cluttered with power objects. However, if the destruction of the power objects associated with the chief were the only concern, then the abandonment of the house at the death of the chief should suffice. Why the rules against maintenance, which ensure that the house self-destructs roughly every decade? Unquote. Struther's surprise is far from unwarranted. The construction of a new kibulu represents the culmination of long effort and lots of resources. The production of the power statues alone, which were ultimately left to rot alongside the building, required the services of a master carver, a painter, and a sorcerer. That such projects would be given over to ruin without any attempt to even salvage materials indicates that something, TM, is going on. This planned ruination and its many meanings is what we'll look at next. But before that, I want to say just how much I liked the parallel made with people's lifespans by the Eastern Penday. There's a lot of other things going into this phenomenon, of course, but I can't shake the feeling that our reaction to ruination is conditioned by the same cultural blockage around death and dying that I rambled about In my January 2023 post, "Have you met my ghoul friend?" thinking about Lakeland ghosts. If our dwellings are indeed human themselves, as Suzanne Preston Bleer's Tamburma interlocutors argued in her paper on Space and Place in Togo, perhaps they should be treated like Pende Kibulu, allowed to grow old and die with dignity, surrounded by friends, or even, in the case of Kibulu, children, before beginning a second life as homes to ancestors. Pende possibilities. There's certainly the classical engagement with ruin here. Ruins still mark the passage of time, or state-like power. They are remnants of the past that evoke decay, fading grandeur, impermanence, and memory. Quote, "Even if the community rebuilds the house, they will require that the chief live next to the decaying wreck of his previous home, including statuary toppled from the roof, as a lesson on the limits of political power. The rotting Kibulu will serve as a memento mori, as do the coffin with which he is required to live and the cemetery soil on which he must sleep." Unquote. The Eastern Pende case alerts us to the fact that this orientation hardly exhausts the aesthetic possibilities of ruin. Even their deployment of memento mori is far from wistful or nostalgic. Strother describes how people she interviewed spoke with obvious glee about the chiefs being reminded that he will die, based, and parents took their children to abandoned villages where they pointed out nature's reclamation in a manner that emphasized respect for the new spiritual occupants. Graphic: two thatch roof structures side by side, one without any remaining walls. Caption: "The Kibulu of Chief Kandamba, next to the ruins of the previous Kibulu, taken in 67. End graphic. Ruins prompt imaginative efforts, including but not limited to the effort involved in thinking about what the structure looked like when whole. They can make the connection between nature and the built environment immediate, midwifing discussion around the ways the two coexist or encroach on each other. Pende interviewees suggested that the collapsed Kibulu would serve as a house for ghosts and seed spirits, who would, in turn, engage favorably with the people that opened their villages to them. Even the act of growing trees around and through the ruined building, at first glance another act of memento mori, relies upon the interplay of built and unbuilt to make its actual point. Quote, "Ironically, the impermanence of the chief's house is contrasted with the relative permanence of the long-lived trees planted in his honor in the courtyard, the lofty Chlorophora excelsa towering over the village flatters him with the memory he will leave behind. However, the quality of trees that is most savored is their unstinting obedience. In the words of a favorite proverb, a tree has ears, but the human child has none." A plant, whether started by seed or slip, grows exactly where it is placed. It cannot wander off or rebel. No other being can ever attain this standard of steadfastness. The chief does well who measures himself against the virtue of a tree, and realizes that his glory will lie in submitting his will to that of his people. End quote. Ruins challenge notions of functionality. What is this for, screams the European, in the built environment, thereby inviting critical examination of progress narratives, the inertness of such sites, lacking any active, anthropocentric function, enables engagement with our surroundings, freed from the constraint of purpose. It's an opening of space. Often literally, Eastern Pende philosophers of ruin recognized this phenomenon and were attuned to its significance. Quote, "The Eastern Pende Kibulu lies midway between embrace of a building's life cycle and outright political iconoclasm. While the regular renewals of the Kibulu structure a cycle of rejuvenation and rebirth, the building is rigged to self-destruct, and its disintegration packs as much emotive force as the torched palaces in Cameroon. In this case, it is important to realize that the decaying wreck of the chief's house is orchestrated as an aesthetic experience that signifies fully as much as the new building. Unquote. Ruination also, as the original Against the Wicked City post points out, opens space for socio-political possibility. Well-maintained social order is the enemy of freewheeling adventure. And so, the more ruined everything is, the more freedom player characters will have to run around inside of it. It's a notable difference, though, that the Pende and the Songye and the Mbuti, and so on, chose this freedom. The liberation player characters are faced with in a world of Pende ruin is not a temporary gap while waiting for a new thousand-year empire to emerge from fallow ground, or the result of inexorable decline. It's something they have to work for, perhaps even built on revolutionary action. As Strother points out, the self-destructing Kubulu is, among other things, a sharp political weaponization of ruin that I find hard to read otherwise. Quote, in effect, the rebuilding of the Kubulu every 7 to 12 years acts as a referendum on the chief's performance in office. To an extraordinary degree, it reminds him that he rules at the pleasure of the people, in their desire to thwart the accumulation of coercive power in the hands of their chiefs. The Eastern Pende have turned architecture against the state. The perpetual renewal of his house requires regular renegotiation of the social contract between the chief and his people, and underscores their interdependence. Unquote. Pende intentionality is, I think, a good bridge between the power of ruin as aesthetic and the desire to play in worlds where your character isn't dumbly blinking at the shattered labors of your betters. It may even be a genuinely optimistic spin on the hobby's love of ruin, hopeful in a way that Corey defended earlier, if one is willing to reconsider what forms that expansion of human knowledge can take. That was An OSR Aesthetics of Ruinwall, Pende Art in Decay, written by Enzira Meyer, and read for you, again with apologies for pronunciation, by Nick L.S. Whalen. Blogs on Tape is a project to make great RPG blogs more accessible. It is a community effort that you can contribute to by doing all the things that every piece of media published on the internet needs you to do in order to please the computers and the algorithms that govern their actions. On your podcatcher of choice, you can review the podcast, leave a rating, and if you know anyone who might be interested in posts like these, please send it directly to them. And in any event, thank you very much for listening.